Welcome to the Maze Marketing Podcast. This isn't another podcast about marketing tricks or hacks, but about building effective marketing systems, beating marketing overwhelm, and communicating your expertise with your hosts, Rob Drummond and Jonathan Wilson. If you're listening to this out and about and it's not convenient to make notes, then don't fear, because we've already made detailed notes on this episode. You can go to mazemarketingpodcast.com/38, which is 38, this episode number, and you can download the detailed PDF notes that we've already made. This week we're talking to George Cron. So George is someone who I met through Perry Marshall's group. I think a really interesting topic at the moment is how agencies are going to develop. Something we're seeing is that agency knowledge, the knowledge to manage pay-per-click campaigns, has become quite commoditized. But finding an agency who can really deliver results is quite hard, especially in lead generation. So George's agency specializes in lead generation. And in this conversation, we talked about the 80-20 audit that George provides, which is completely different to the audits that most agencies do. We also talked about CRM systems. So this is my favorite type of conversation. It's quite a wide-ranging, quite a holistic chat, talking about the things that matter most. So whether you work on the agency side, or whether you hire agencies, or work with an agency to deliver your results, then I think you'll get a lot from this conversation. So let's jump in. Okay, so I met today's guest, George Cron, at Perry Marshall's Paradigm Shift workshop, which was an ad writing workshop in Chicago a couple of years ago. And I think George, you were there as a copywriter. Was that right?
Yeah, from what I recall, Perry had kind of gone to his database and he was looking at all the different marketing DNA indexes and, okay, which sliver of my list falls into the copywriting category. And I think I must have made the cut just barely, because yes, I do like copywriting and stuff like that. I am more towards recorded and words and more towards alchemist. So I enjoy that kind of stuff, and especially in the context of ad writing and things like that. But yeah, so I think that's how I got roped into that one, and I'm glad I did, because I met you there, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that puts you in quite an interesting situation, because you run a AdWords agency. Well, I mean, you do other things other than AdWords, but you're running an agency, but you've also got a copywriting perspective on it as well. And we went out for a beer afterwards, went out for some pizza. And then after I got back, I sent you an email and I said, we were going to do this crazy podcast, and would you like to come on? And George said, no, it's okay, I'm a bit busy. I'll get back to you.
Pretending to be a snob, I was intimidated a little bit, you know, and now I'm more comfortable. I've done a few podcasts and you guys are just great. So I was like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it.
Yeah, so I've been persistently nagging for 2 years. So anyway, I finally got you on. So George, welcome. Perhaps you'd like to just introduce yourself and a bit of your story in terms of how you got to doing what you do.
Sure, absolutely. So I started way back in 2007 in the whole marketing world. I was working at a manufacturing company. So I come from a town in Manitoba, Canada, and it's a manufacturing community. And I was working at that company, and we were trying to crack the code. We were trying to solve a problem. It was a company that manufactures RV aftermarket parts. So let's say you have an RV and then somebody backs into you and you need new fenders for it or whatever. So that's kind of the context. So we would make those plastic parts, a lot of replacement parts for those things. So that company had a product line of RV parts, and we would sell through the traditional channels, distributors, RV dealers, that kind of thing. And then they would often take an order when we would get one, or somebody would reach out and then they would fulfill an order, but they weren't really pushing very hard to sell the product line. So then one day, John, my boss, comes into my office and he drops a book on my desk, and it was called Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords by Perry Marshall. And he says to me, this is kind of out of my realm of expertise, but I think this would be right up your alley, George. So long story short, we needed to figure out how to sell directly to the end users, the RV owners, the consumers who actually are cruising around in their RVs all over North America. And I know you have them in Europe too. I think you call them caravans or something, or I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, all right. I got a point there, so that's good. But yeah, so John took me to a few marketing seminars in Chicago as well. It's where I met Perry for the first time. I admit I was a little bit starstruck the first time I met him. It was just great to meet Perry, just such a good down-to-earth dude. And so that kind of was a bit of a catalyst to us ramping up even further. So I read the book, I went to the marketing seminars, and just every time my brain was a sponge, just soaking the stuff up. And each time I would just come back and implement as fast as possible. And then as soon as we had one piece figured out, then that would get delegated to someone, and then we would kind of try to solve something else. So that's kind of where I got into the whole internet marketing world. I worked for that company for 6 years. They were a client after I left the company. They were my client for a while and still on great terms with them. And I just started my agency, and just the typical kind of, I would do Google AdWords stuff. It was called AdWords back then. Now it's just Google Ads, but
I think we all still call it AdWords though, don't we?
Okay. So yeah, maybe you guys are still, yeah.
Totally, yeah.
The original Real McCoy, it's AdWords, right? You young kids call it Google Ads. So.
Yeah, that's it.
But yeah, so, and then it just kind of expanded from there. Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads, and then what we've done recently is take it further and just kind of go more diving deeper. Instead of going horizontally, we've gone more vertical, I think is the right term, where instead of just adding more ad platforms and we're just an ad management agency, now we've kind of specialized more, and we do online lead generation for manufacturing companies, industrial, and kind of that whole manufacturing background I have, industrial services, all those kinds of companies that use more traditional marketing, not really a lot of the high-tech digital stuff, online stuff. So, and then what we do now is we also do CRM setups so that they can have that complete transparency. They can see right from when somebody clicked the ad to literally putting the leads in their sales team's lap, or they're served up on a silver platter right in the CRM. They can just go in there and reply to the inquiries or answer those phone calls or whatever, or follow up by phone. And that's really the final piece of the puzzle, or everything is always evolving, but that's one big piece of the puzzle that we put into place only in the last year that's kind of really solidified things and made it a real easy sell to some of these companies that would typically do traditional marketing and had a hard time wrapping their brain around this digital stuff. And it's just a bunch of bits and bytes out there in internet world. And how do I know this stuff is even working? So yeah, that's kind of what's brought it all together for us.
I like that you're going deep into it. Like, so you might be interested to know that my business used to be called Rear End PPC. And the logic behind that was that it was to do with back-end sales. So it's not just about generating a lead. It would be to do with following up that lead, adding it to a CRM system, nurturing that lead, and ultimately creating a customer. I obviously didn't go about that the right way. It wasn't a great name. I fully hold my hands up and acknowledge that. But, you know, it was sort of getting at the same thing. It's like, I think Perry's been talking about this as well, that the expertise of managing Google Ads is fairly commoditized, but the ability to create customers is quite hard, especially in lead generation for traditional offline businesses. And it sounds to me like that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah. So we've kind of niched down. So instead of being all things to all companies, we've decided to specialize. So like we'll also do e-commerce, but only if it's really in the context of an existing business. Like a great example is we do lead generation for a trailer manufacturer, but they also sell the parts for the trailers, and the parts are done with e-commerce. So then we also look after that for them because we're competent, we know how to do that well, but that's just not really our specialty anymore. And it's just the complete package for them. So, yeah. But yeah, it's specializing. It's kind of taking it to the next level and not just being a commodity and we do everything exactly the same as anyone else. And you're only choosing us because you like us better or for whatever reason. So we do a bunch of things differently.
Do you see this as being like the future of agencies? Because I think a lot of agencies at the moment are quite stretched or are feeling the pain of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, one aspect of that, or one response to that, is to focus down on a particular vertical and sort of go deeper into that. Is that something that you think we'll see more of?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even with general marketing companies that kind of do everything, so especially a smaller company, like if you're trying to do everything, and oh yes, we do print and we do online stuff and we do all these different things. We do mail outs and stuff like that. And if you're a small company, like it's hard to be great at anything if you're just really spreading yourself very thin and just trying to do everything. So I can understand if you're like a really big agency and you have departments for each of those things and you have specialists and they go really deep on each of those, I can understand how that would work great. But for a smaller company, like a lot of boutique agencies, like we have a handful of staff and I've deliberately chosen to not try to be everything to everyone. And we only do online lead generation for these kinds of traditional established companies like manufacturing, industrial services, whatever. So that's what I did about a year ago, is kind of analyze the data of being in business for 11 years. Where have we had our biggest successes? What do these companies have in common? Are they a typical size, typical revenue? What's the common denominator here? And then when we had that data, we could clearly see, and even going from memory, after the fact, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that's right. We knocked it out of the park there. That was a total flop. This was mediocre. So then we're like, okay, that makes sense. We knocked it out of the park here because this is what they had in common. And it's like, okay, we're going to start saying no to all the bad opportunities for sure. We're even going to say no to the good ones. We're going to say yes to the great ones. Yes, we know with very high certainty we'll be able to do extremely well for these types of companies. So that's where we're at right now.
I sort of feel like you have to kiss a lot of bad frogs to learn what a bad frog looks like.
Yeah, that is true. So it is kind of painful. It's a growing process. Like you guys would know all about that. And you have to kind of take a few punches and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, we said yes to that. We definitely should not have said yes to that. That was a great learning opportunity. We can learn something from that. And now we know, okay, we're really bad at that. So for whatever reason, we said yes, we shouldn't have, but we're really bad at that. So I guess one example, I have to be careful with this because I really care about great causes and stuff like that. So that's part of our mission, is we try to help business owners who are good, ethical, honest business owners. And I see our agency as being kind of a catalyst to take them from this stage where they're at and take them, work with them for 2, 3, sometimes 8 years. Our longest standing customer is 8 years and they love us, but we take them from one place to the next. And that's kind of our mission. And we want to help those business owners, because when we see good, ethical, honest business owners, when they have more money, they do great things with that. They donate to causes. They hire good people. They provide jobs. So we're indirectly boosting the economy like that. And that's really where our role is. And we don't, I said this morning to my men's group that I get together with, I said, I don't expect that I'm going to be a multimillionaire by the time I die. If I do, that's great, but that's not really my mission. My job is to have my team and to help these companies do good things. So long story short, what I'm trying to get at is, I believe in helping those causes. So I found out that I can do that so much better indirectly. So like there's all these different causes. I'm not going to try to boast and, oh, we support this cause and that one and whatever. So, but I'm much more effective when my agency can help a business grow. And then you can see the work that they're doing in the community. You can, and behind the scenes, you kind of get wind of, oh, they sent a huge donation to that cause. And there's all these great things happening behind the scenes. So we can help the world get better in that way, instead of me trying to, like, we do help some nonprofits. So that's kind of what I was getting at. So it's not our strength. We found out we're at our best when we're working with these other kind of non-glamorous companies, but they're for-profit companies. And for whatever reason, for us, it's much harder to try to get a donation out of somebody than it is to get a lead, and that leads to a huge project or a huge sale or whatever. So,
yeah.
So yeah. That's where we're at, and we just we believe in those causes, but we can help them so much better by indirectly doing that.
I think my take on that as well, it's like you invest your time and therefore your life into these projects, so you might as well like what they're doing.
Right, exactly right. So I guess just being from the manufacturing background, and years ago, like I started out right on the shop floor. I used to try to hide that. And then I think about maybe it was 6 months or a year ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to step out and I'm going to put on my LinkedIn profile that I was actually a machine operator way back when, and like we need people for everything. So I'm not trying to downgrade anybody who's those production frontline staff. Like we need everybody, and we just have different roles or whatever. And for me personally, I realized I wasn't living up to my full potential being on the shop floor like that. So,
yeah.
And you kind of just advance and then it goes from there. So we try to live up to our full potential. So that's where I can relate, even from all aspects, when we meet with a company and we go back and have a factory tour and stuff like that. And it's just a good reminder of where I came from and where I am now and what's needed. So, yeah.
I think in terms of bringing on that sort of client, that's also quite an important part of your story as well, that shows that you have been in that situation and you really get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I can relate to them, and I make a point when I'm having a tour, I'll see what they're doing and really appreciate, like, okay, I've been in those shoes and I can see, okay, yeah, this is a very intricate part of this manufacturing process, and I get that, and I can see, okay, this person is kind of getting tired, they're towards the end of their shift, and I can definitely relate. And but I guess from a marketing point of view, that even helps, that helps me to see the whole picture, like just being reintroduced to it again, but also like just that's where I came from. And then I know, okay, so the economics of this whole thing need to work. So if we can kind of scale up the leads on the front end, which scales up the number of sales that the sales team can close, which leads to more work, which means more people can get hired to do these jobs, and they're usually very well-run plants, like state-of-the-art, super clean and everything, and just great workplaces, and people are grateful for that kind of employment, and just those good good business owners that just run a real tight ship and just great people to work for. So I can kind of see even that impact that we're making within their building and just the opportunities for people in the community.
I prefer to follow Howard Gossage's advice. So he was writing in the 60s and he was saying, never step foot in the factory. As far as you're concerned, writing copy, products get made by magic. I completely understand where you're coming from though. And, I think for the audience you're going after, that's a great approach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just shift gears a bit and jump to the question I know Jonathan is itching to ask. So I was on your website earlier and I noticed that you offer an 80-20 audit, which obviously brings all sorts of bells to us. So could you tell us a little bit about the 80-20 audit and what that is and where that came from?
Sure. Yeah, so I guess when I met Perry Marshall, I learned about the 80-20 principle. And then when he wrote his book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, that's my favorite business book, by the way. And I got my autographed copy right here in my desk. But
there you go.
But anyway, so that's kind of where we borrowed the name, or I don't think anybody else was calling it an 80-20 marketing analysis. And what we do is we do the audits of a business's online ad accounts, but it's kind of evolved from that, looking at their whole marketing and sales funnel. And now with the CRM stuff that we're doing, now we're also getting access to their existing CRM if they have it, and seeing if they're actually maximizing that and seeing if everything is integrated as well as it could be, or if it's even possible to do that with their existing system. So that's what the 80-20 marketing analysis looks like today. So basically, and that has evolved over time too. So in the old days, and I'm more of a kind of a recorded person, you can call it, when we talk about the marketing DNA index, I'm more in favor of recorded, pre-planned stuff like that. So in the old days, I would have a spreadsheet, and then here's all the different parts of the online ad account, here's the different parts of the marketing and sales funnel, and there would be a scorecard, and it would be an Excel sheet, and it would be all these different things, and I was really proud of how clever I was with all these
too much though, isn't it?
Grades and all that stuff. And yeah, so what I found was a lot of people would get this, and it's like, okay, I got a scorecard and I got a D minus, or I got a C, or what does that even mean? And then there's all this stuff in almost a foreign language, and your quality score is typically in this range, and your account structure, whatever, you only got 2 out of 5 on that. And I would put comments and explain it. And like, this was a completely foreign language to people. So I think when I started kind of getting more out of my shell and being more of a live person, like being on a podcast, kind of winging it on the fly here and stuff like that, being on camera and stuff like that, when I kind of came out of my cave, and it all kind of came together with hiring people. But that's when my people skills were kind of forced to get better, and I took some training and stuff like that. And what that led to was, okay, instead of sending these people this spreadsheet with this thing and it spits out a number and whatever, this foreign language, I'm gonna do a video overview. I'll still have my notes. I went away from the spreadsheet because now it's kind of, it's once you've done things dozens of times, I would say probably approaching hundreds of times, I would say that I can already see things from a mile away, and I know what I'm looking for right away out of the gate. And now I just make my quick rough notes and I just jot it down there. Once I have that, I'll have my notes in front of me, but I'll get a few tabs prepared in my browser, and then I'll do a screen share, and I'll have my little talking head in the corner there. And now I'll say in plain English, okay, here's this part of your account. So we're going to go through your Google Ads account now. And here's the first thing I look for. And here's this major problem that I see. And this is a red flag. And sometimes you have to be a little bit delicate because it might be the business owner themselves that set everything up. And
Yeah.
And they might not have that expertise that we have from doing this for 11 years. So mm-hmm. it is a little bit delicate. So you kind of don't drill them so hard when you know that it's a do-it-yourself setup. If they have another agency, it's interesting because sometimes we usually come across three different scenarios. Either it's mediocre, it's kind of not bad, it's not great, or it will be done very well, and I'm the first one to recognize great work, and I'll audit some things, and I'll be like, wow, like, your current agency is doing a phenomenal job, like, you need to hold on to these guys because you're definitely getting your money's worth. Like, I've seen some pretty bad stuff, and they check all the boxes, they're doing everything very well. So I don't even try to get that business away from those kinds of agencies, and I can respect great work, and I'll just give them the straight scoop. It is a loss leader for us, the 80-20 marketing analysis, but I'm not in their hard sales pitch trying to claw all these accounts and trying to win all this business. So the third scenario that I am talking about is, you know, sometimes come in there and it's a complete train wreck. So if it's another agency that has set this up and it's a train wreck, then whatever. Those ones are the best audits. Like, it's kind of amusing for other marketing experts. It's kind of like, okay, yeah, he's ripping him to shreds here and he's not having any mercy. And if there's agencies that are charging top dollar and they're producing garbage like that, like, that's got to be called out. That's also another mission, is just calling out bad work. This is 2020. Like, come on, guys. Digital marketing is quite mature already, and you can't be putting out shoddy work and charging X dollars for that. So I'll be totally upfront and just rip those to shreds. And so that's one part of it. And then I'll do the other things, but there will be separate video clips. That was another iteration. Like, the first one was like, oh shoot, I just sent them a 45-minute video. So then they're like, oh crap, now I got to book off an hour and watch this thing, and hopefully my eyes don't glaze over. So then I would break it up into smaller video clips, more bite size. And it's like, okay, I'll take a few minutes, I'll watch this clip and then wrap my brain around that. And okay, I'll take some time later on and I'll watch the next clip and whatever. It's more of a process, and it's not so overwhelming. So you learn after doing these things. So, kind of going back to the name, 80-20 marketing analysis. So really what it is, if I'm going to put out like a 5-minute clip or a 10-minute clip, you can't take time to go deep into everything. So that's where I have my notes, and these are the 80-20 opportunities. So this is the major stuff that's wrong. If you fix these few issues, that's where you're going to get lots of improvement with minimal results. So that's the whole 80-20 principle there. It's 80%.
A suggestion for you. You should change it to the 95-5 audit.
There you go.
Actually, behind the scenes, I have it in one of my ideas. I collect all of my ideas somewhere. And I was like, okay, what if I would do a 95-5? What's the one thing? What's that top thing that you need to do? Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm only going to put out a 3-minute clip, and this is the worst thing that's going on with your marketing and sales funnel, or this is the worst thing in your CRM or whatever. So,
for a business owner, they don't need another 80-page audit telling them that the ad text isn't capitalized, or that they're not using call out extensions, or that they're not using, you know, whatever. They just need to know what the biggest bleeding neck problem is. And actually, when I audit a lot of AdWords accounts, especially if an agency has been involved, I often see that the work itself is good, but the strategy is wrong. So it's well organized, it's well structured, they're not doing anything wrong as such, but they're just doing the wrong things. Is that what that is in the 95-5?
Yes, that's a great point. I'm making some notes here too, some mental notes, but that's a very good point. So as time has gone on too, a big part of it is strategy. So you're absolutely right, Rob. Sometimes they'll request a Google Ads audit. So that's kind of one sliver of it. They can just pay for a Google Ads audit because they think the problem is in their Google Ads account, And this is kind of going back to Perry again. So way back when, he always used to be perceived as the Google AdWords guy, and people would come to him and they would say, hey, can you look at our Google AdWords account? And they would spend a few minutes on that, and the rest of the time spent was on the really deep marketing problems and stuff that's going on in the business, and they would get touched on. So sometimes people will request a Google Ads audit. I'll do one. I'll say, here's kind of the main things that should be fixed. But what I'll include as a bonus is, hey, here's all these other opportunities that I see. I know you paid for a Google Ads audit. I know this isn't what you asked for, but there are other issues that are beyond that. So I won't go into the full 80-20 marketing analysis, but I'll just say, hey, you know what? You're using Google Ads, but you should probably be using Facebook Ads. That would work really well. This is a targeting strategy that would work very well. So you're even just pivoting from one platform to the other, because there's other tactics that you can use that you cannot use on one platform or whatever. Or there's a way to reach your ideal target audience much better on LinkedIn or on Facebook, or it might be the opposite. They might be doing Facebook ads and it's like, why are you not doing Google ads? Like, this is a no-brainer. And it seems like a lot of the businesses that have started online marketing in the last 5 years or so, I think this is more kind of Jonathan's angle. There's a lot of people who are doing Facebook ads and they're missing the boat because they've never gotten on board with Google ads. So
exactly.
It's one of those things where, even in our fireside chat before we started recording here, we were kind of talking about the bigger picture and having a multi-platform approach, and not just, should I do Facebook ads or should I do LinkedIn ads or Google ads? It's like, well, the right answer is probably a comprehensive strategy is much better for using your budget and spreading that out. So usually they don't have as big a budget as they would like in the beginning until you get some traction, and then they can't spend as much as they would need to spend on each platform, but at least doing something on all of them. Like we found Google search paired with Facebook retargeting works very well. So it's just a great way to, a low cost way to recover a lot of those leads. And in our line of work, so if it's lead generation for something like a manufacturing company, we found that, for whatever reason, Facebook retargeting ads and using, not even trying to drive them back to the website, but just having send us a message, call to action. So then they're having that conversation right there on Facebook, and then integrating that on the back end and putting those leads into their system too. And then showing them that transparency, hey, Facebook is actually working for your business quite well, and just tying it all together. And yes, we go on there to look at our pictures of our friends' kids and whatever, and try to, whatever, we see all this stuff about COVID-19, and now somebody sees exactly the product or service that this manufacturing company is offering, and then you can almost picture them breathing a sigh of relief. Finally, I'm seeing something other than masks or COVID or death count or cases or whatever. Yeah. Hey, that's that thing that I was researching the other day, and it's like, hey, this is exactly what I'm looking for. And it's like, oh yeah, I'll just send a message. I'm here on my phone anyway. And then they're having this conversation, and it's pretty similar to what you would have in an email communication back and forth, but now it's like they're just chatting on Facebook, and it's more informal, and it's just kind of what things are gravitating towards, and it's actually quicker because now you're not waiting for a reply to an email and stuff like that. And a lot of people are just more comfortable with chat or with kind of those recorded mediums now. I don't know if it's a millennial thing or what, but...
Well, we've been doing that recently. We've been trying to get tradespeople around to do bits of work on the house because we just moved house, and then we can't get any tradespeople around because they're all busy because everyone can't go on holiday, so everyone's having work done on their house. But my wife's just been contacting people on Facebook. That's basically been her main way of getting in touch. Mm-hmm. It's a real thing. It's like, it's not just a millennial. Like, people will contact you on Facebook. But I also feel like that's quite close. That's quite a qualified lead. It's not It's not someone who's just initially opting in for more information. That's someone who's quite interested.
Yeah, they would be seeking you out, like you were seeking out the tradespeople to do the work on your house. So yeah, I guess that's where. Yeah, I'm not sure if you were being retargeted or if you were just deliberately I'm searching for this. So that's kind of where Facebook.
I'm not being retargeted by any of these people, and they're really missing an opportunity. In all this like recession stuff, like the big opportunity really. This isn't just my opinion. Like Dan Kennedy's been saying this. Like the big opportunity is in improving your follow-up systems. Mm-hmm. It's the companies that never follow up that are going to go out of business mostly. So yeah, like it's as bad as like I don't even get phone calls back.
Yeah. Waste in a marketing funnel. Waste is like probably the biggest single problem that I see over and over and over again. It's phenomenal. I had a call the other day, a company had basically 15,000 messenger conversations, connections, not like people, right? And hadn't followed up with a single one of them. Cause just like, they weren't sure how, they didn't know how it worked. Right. And it's like, it's kind of sad because, waste, like cutting loss and reducing waste and all that does not seem to appeal on the front to business owners. Everybody wants the next big PLF, the next big tactic that's going to like make them a million overnight. And that's
they just want the Google ads audit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, but it's just phenomenal, the missed opportunities that are out there.
So waste is like the 99-1 audit.
Totally, literally, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're seeing even with the CRMs that we're setting up now. So now it's a matter of, okay, so we have this great solution. Now the company has this transparency, but now their sales team is kind of old school and they're not even used to working in a CRM and they're just kind of, they're just whatever. I'm not even sure what systems they use. They just see the emails when they come in or when they answer the phone when it rings. And if it's an after hours call, well, the ball is just dropped. So that's the beauty of it. So every call gets put in there. So now they just come back to their desk in the morning and, oh, there's all these phone leads that came in. They left this message and, hey, yeah, we have them all in one place. And now my job is just to follow up on these people and just do the work and not just drop the ball. So very, very good point about even just responding to those leads. If we're generating all these leads and they're just dropping the ball and then we get heck later on, it's like, how come you're proven results? How come you're not getting results for us? And it's like, listen back to those phone call recordings and half the time the phone doesn't get answered and whatever. We just have to be blunt and real with them. And obviously we follow all of the rules and regulations with the call recordings and stuff. So we're not eavesdropping on all of your calls. So all the paranoid old school people don't need to be concerned about that. But yeah, it's just the follow-up.
I think while we're talking about 99-1, I mean, I've done a fair amount of work in different CRM systems. And what I've seen is that the success of the CRM mostly depends on how easy it is to use for the people working in it day to day, who are often salespeople, who often aren't very technical. They just need to know who they need to call today, who they need to contact, who they need to follow up with, what the notes were from the last interaction. And, you know, if you just bought a CRM system because you've copied someone else, you haven't really thought about your requirements, you haven't really thought about what your salespeople need, mm-hmm. It's probably not going to be, it's not normally that intuitive. And you'll find that the salespeople end up working around it and it all falls apart. And then that's when the leads don't get followed up. And then on top of that, you're also wasting money on a CRM system that isn't really doing what you need anyway.
Yeah, absolutely right. So I guess that's the next puzzle we got to solve if we keep going even deeper in this vertical. So, and I have some contacts. I have some colleagues that specialize in this kind of stuff and doing sales process audits and stuff like that. And that's really where I think that partnership is going to tighten up. So that's kind of where we're making a conscious decision. Again, we're going to stay in our lane. This is kind of our wheelhouse. And then this is where it makes sense for this company to start working with somebody else who's kind of an expert in that field. So, and they can help them train their salespeople or do an audit, and like, you just need to fire all these guys and hire new salespeople, or if it's that extreme. But yeah, it's using the CRM properly, and if you just have those people, I guess that becomes an HR issue at that point. If you have people who don't want to use the system and it's well designed and it's the right solution, and now you have people who just are stubborn and don't want to use it, well, that's, yeah, here you go, human resources, you take care of that one.
Yeah, I think if you've got people coming into an organization and it's already established what you're using and it's a good fit for the needs of the job and it helps you with your job, it's like, well, there isn't any issue with that. It's when you've got people who are already entrenched in an older way of doing something and you're trying to introduce a new system, like it's a tough ask. Like I've been in this situation implementing Infusionsoft in different places, often when Infusionsoft wasn't really the right tool anyway. And it, you know, looking back, there were red flags there. I'm sort of banging on at this, but I think it's really important. I think for lead generation clients, it isn't just about generating leads. The lead is the starting point, and you have to follow up with it, especially if you need to get that person on the phone or see them if that's possible at the moment.
Like, okay, I ask a question then. I know I'm the podcast guest, but how did you get the buy-in from the businesses if you did implement a new CRM system? So you would have implemented different ones because email marketing or marketing automation may have been more of the strategy for those kinds of businesses. But regardless, it's having something new and introducing it to an existing company. How do you get the buy-in from them?
Well, I think what I'm seeing more of now in CRM is that often companies will use two CRM systems. They'll use a marketing automation CRM system in principle to do the marketing automation to send the segmented emails to the right people at the right time, to add people to Facebook custom audiences at the right time. Systems are like, I don't know, most of them, Entreport, Infusionsoft, ActiveCampaign, ShopSpring, like they all do this reasonably well. But then people will start using these systems and they also have like a task element, like task management, workflow, that sort of thing. And they often just don't do that as well. So they'll often end up using something like Pipedrive as a sales CRM because it's easier for the sales team to use. They can move opportunities from one pipeline stage to the next. And that's becoming more common. And the main thing is that the data, like you need a centralized place for the data. You need these systems to speak to each other. But ultimately, I guess the buy-in for the people using it, they have to log in easily. It has to be easy to use. They have to see only the data that they need to see. The massive problem in Infusionsoft is that you give someone a user a license to it, and they just see all of this stuff that they don't need to see. They see all of these menus, they see all of these reports, and it just puts people off straight away, like especially for like non-technical people.
So it comes down to the 80-20 of showing them only what they need to see, and this is where you'll be. This is what you need mostly, and you can look at the other stuff, but here's where you need to spend your time.
Yeah, I've been doing some work with a client recently, and they originally started off as like a front end skin, if you like, for Infusionsoft. So rather than every salesperson or every person in your company having a separate Infusionsoft login, which also makes Infusionsoft really expensive, you could create individual logins and different people would see different task lists depending on what they need to see. They'd see different contacts even depending on who they work with or who they need to call. They might only see certain contacts that are relevant to them. So you're completely changing the way that these people interact with the CRM system and follow up with leads. And that has a massive impact just in terms of the waste, in terms of what happens to these leads. And I think this stuff doesn't get thought about because it's more work up front to do this right and get all these screens configured and make sure that the right people have access to the right data and figuring out what that data is. And, you know, you probably need help from like a systems expert because most business owners aren't systems experts. So it's more work to do up front. It's like anything. It's like creating simplicity is harder, and it requires more thought to go into it. But once it's set up, then that pays for itself.
Great points. So I'm making some mental notes here. I got some great takeaways here from this podcast too.
We aim to please. Jonathan, is there anything you're burning to ask?
What's your favorite 80-20 reports to run when you actually get access to the data, George?
I guess, so when we get access to everything, I'm kind of old school. I'll just log in directly to the accounts. Like, we don't use a lot of external tools or anything like that. But,
yeah, yeah.
But what we always do is we have our set of columns that we use for all of the different ad accounts, and there's a different process for the marketing and sales funnel and stuff like that. But but anyway, for the ad accounts specifically, we'll always have our columns that we set up, and then we can see what we need to see. And that's also part of the visibility and stuff like that. So, but I'll just go through it, and then I'll sort by cost, because where is the money being spent? And then you'll see that 80-20 or that 95-5 pattern. And
totally.
So if I'm drilling down into an account, then okay, sort by cost. So most of the money is being spent in this campaign. Click into there. Which of the ad groups, sort by cost again, okay, for whatever reason. So this one is eating up all the cost. This one that's performing very well down here is just starving and would love to have more budget, but this ad group is eating up all the cost in this campaign. So that needs to go, or it needs to be put somewhere else so that you can control the budget and rein it in. So that's really what it comes down to, is just putting the columns in place, looking at the costs, seeing if they are even doing any conversion tracking, and what are they tracking, and going from there. So that's really, where's the money being spent?
Totally. Yeah. Outside of like the kind of, I hate to call it standard because it's really not standard and a lot of people ignore it, but outside of the standard AdWords kind of 80-20 things that are easy to spot, have you ever run anything that was like really unique, or you know, showed up something surprising you weren't expecting in the CRM, something like that?
Okay, I'm trying to think of, I'm thinking of a few different examples. I guess one really good 80-20 or 95-5 things, kind of staying on that theme. We worked with a company a few years ago, and I was supposed to do an audit, and they weren't using Google Ads because they were banned from Google. They weren't using Facebook ads because they were banned from Facebook. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, what kind of a shady thing is this? And so we got access to their Bing ads account. Now it's called Microsoft Advertising, but we got access to their Bing ads account. And then what I usually do is use a 90-day time range when I'm doing an audit, because that's a long enough time frame to kind of see some patterns and trends. And it's not so short that any recent things are really messing with things or whatever. So anyway, I logged in, I put my columns in place that I usually have. I set my time range, and then my jaw kind of dropped, and I'm like, because before I even got access to the account, I went to their website and I was like, oh, give me a break. This website was created in like the 90s when the internet first came out or whatever. I was like, okay, this is going to be Mickey Mouse. Okay, I'm just going to, I'll do a good job of the audit, but whatever. This one, we're not going to, probably not going to work with anyway. So I'll just get it done quickly, efficiently, and move along. But anyway, so I got access to the account. I set my time range. I'm ready to do the audit. And I'm like, my jaw dropped. And I'm like, is that right? Did I choose last 2 weeks or last month or whatever? The amount that they had spent was, I think they were spending over $100,000 every single month. So at the time, that we had never worked on an account that was that high ad spend. So I'm like, sure. So I was like, wow, okay, this might be a really big fish that would be nice to work with. But I was like, how does that compute? So they're spending over $100,000 a month in ads, and then I have my conversion tracking or my conversion columns enabled. No conversions were being tracked, so we couldn't see any leads, couldn't see any sales, couldn't see anything. We could see clicks, and we could see how much money they're spending. And then I went back to their website. I did a double take. I'm like, how does this compute? How do you have a website that looks like it was built when the internet was born and never updated since, yet you're spending $100,000 in ads. Either something is very wrong and there's like some kind of rich inheritance here that's pouring money down the drain, or this is actually working and somehow the economics of this whole weird system is actually working. So
yeah.
So I did the audit and I said, like, red flag 95.5 or 99.1, you need to be tracking stuff. If you're going to be spending six figures a month, you need to be tracking what's working and what's not. So then it was like easy pickings, because all we did is we put in all of our systems, our tracking and everything. We collected some data for a little while, because you don't want to make major changes if you're not tracking anything. And so now we put in our tracking, we collected data for a few weeks. I think we had a month of data, and then we could start seeing some patterns. And I'm like, okay, that's a no-brainer. 95% of their sales are coming from desktop devices. 5% are coming from mobile devices. But when we look at the spend in their ad account, half of the spend is from desktop, half of it is from mobile devices. So then it was a no-brainer that we drastically reduced the spend on mobile devices, and immediately we cut their spend from over $100,000 a month down to between 40 and 60 a month. After we implemented that simple little change. So that's one of those little things that leads to huge results.
Yeah.
And then we're saving them tons of money every single time. So that's kind of one of those, that's probably the weirdest thing that I've ever seen. So it didn't address the underlying thing. So that's kind of where strategy comes in. So yes, that kind of solved the immediate problem in the ad account. The underlying root cause of the problem was, this was an outdated website and it worked okay for desktops, but it was horrible on mobile. And you had to zoom in and try to see things. No wonder you're not getting any purchases from mobile, because it's a pain in the neck. It's amazing you've got any sales from mobile. So, so that was something that the business owner just, for whatever reason, they didn't want to tackle that problem. And that's a psychology thing, or I don't know what.
Well, they just don't realize, because every time they visit the website, they're on a desktop. So it looks fine. It works fine.
Yeah.
But then they just don't realize that most of the traffic is on mobile.
And it's been working fine for 12 years. So why change it now?
Yeah. So we fixed that temporary problem. They didn't want to address that other problem. And I said, look, there is a trend here. More and more people are on mobile devices all the time. Like, you need to take action, or this thing is going to fizzle. And that's kind of what we saw, and eventually we ended up parting ways, because they didn't want to address that problem, and we were just kept pushing for it, that was the end result. And it's kind of a sad story, because there could have just kept the ball rolling, but
yeah,
it is what it is. So
it's that waste thing again. I one time it wasn't an ad account, but somebody came to me with a little funnel, an ad issue. I was only involved in it just very briefly, but short version is they're spending $400,000 a month on 12 banner ads and had no tracking at all. None.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. Topped my story, Jonathan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy stuff.
So I think it'd be fair to say that tracking is the first thing. Like, you know, if you're gonna look at one thing in your accounts, like, is tracking in place? Because until the tracking's in place, like, we can't segment. You know, you can't go to your highest cost campaign and segment it by device, because it's not going to tell you anything. It'll just tell you how much you spent.
Yep.
So fix that first. Which is a whole separate conversation, isn't it? Because obviously, if you're tracking online sales, that's fairly easy. Tracking phone calls, doable, but often people don't. So actually, just before we wrap up, I'm interested. So for a lot of these kind of more traditional businesses that you're auditing, what state is their conversion tracking usually in?
Usually non-existent. So as we're kind of specializing more in that, I'll be totally clear. The 80-20 marketing analysis, that's for like an existing, they're already using online advertising, and now we're auditing something that's already in place. So a lot of these companies, that's not even a relevant service for them, because there's nothing there to audit. So this is their first go at it. So now we're doing more setups from scratch, which is also a good thing, because now you're not fixing a train wreck. Now you're just starting from scratch and doing it right from day one. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So some of them do have something in place, but you can kind of see they're just kind of testing the waters a little bit, and obviously things are all wrong, and it's just, they've decided to just kind of, I'll just follow Google's little automated tutorial, and I'll just kind of dump everything in together, and I'll just, whatever, let's just try this and see if it works. We'll put like $500 towards it, and if we don't get any sales, then we'll just kill it. And then they don't even know if it worked or not, and it doesn't have a prayer of working if you're not tracking anything to begin with. But that's the state. It's usually non-existent or just very, very poor.
I think for anyone listening to this, if you've got a lead generation business, like for me, the gold standard is to be able to log into the CRM system and have a field for lead source that tells me the first lead source that contact first bought or opted in from. So what was probably the last click referral in that journey? And then ideally, you might also see the most recent thing that they did before they bought. So the lead source would be the first thing that they did when they first were added into the CRM system. And you might also have some fields for the last referring traffic source that they then bought from. That to me is the gold standard, because then what you can do is say, okay, not just which keywords in my Google Ads account drove the most leads, which ones actually delivered the most business, because there's a very big difference between those two things often.
Right. Yeah, very good point.
Yeah.
In the CRM that we set up, there is a first page visited, so it'll put that source in there. This is where they came from, and exactly the point that you said. So sometimes they'll come in here and then they'll do a bunch of other stuff, and then the last source to something completely different. But then that's kind of a puzzle that a lot of these business owners are trying to solve, even the ones that are kind of further along, and they're just trying to get that transparency. So that way they're not just totally abandoning everything that's higher up in the funnel because it's not bringing in immediate sales, but it's responsible for the initial interaction, and then later on something else pulls them, or it could even be the same source but different keywords or different ads or whatever.
So, yeah, the number of assisted conversions just goes haywire, doesn't it, when you start tying different things together. Right. We're quite big fans of Wicked Reports for showing like the full customer journey. So yep. it'll show, not obviously if you're tracking conversions on Google or Facebook, it's, unless you change the attribution, it's last click, 30-day windows, maybe up to 90-day windows, whereas actually just doesn't take account, especially on social. Like I'm sort of seeing on social that like a lot of the ads that I'm running are kind of video ads for engagements, and I'm running remarketing ads to people who engage with the initial video ads. So it's like, well, how do you give some credits to the initial ad? Because no one buys from it, but they'll watch it. I guess it's quite a complex thing, but like the more insight you can get into this, like the more profitable decisions you're going to make.
Mm-hmm. Totally. George, do you do much with RFM? So way down deep in the 80/20 book, there's the chapter called 3D 80/20. Have you tinkered with that much?
Yeah. So RFM, recency, frequency, money. So that's kind of, that's something that we haven't done as much for our customers. So that's kind of an exercise that we did for our agency when we chose to specialize. And then we looked at all of the customers in our 11-year history, and what's the RFM here, and okay, yeah, this customer, we only get X dollars per month, but they've been with us for years, and that's just like a cash cow, and they have more value than even somebody more recent who's paying a bit more, but they've only been with us for a short amount of time. So it's kind of, that's where that frequency, they got a higher score for the frequency than for the recency and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
So that's something that we could look at doing more for our customers, and it would be another possible service offering and some of that analysis. But yeah, truthfully, we've done it for ourselves and haven't really, I guess, come up with a service offering. Hey, we're going to analyze this piece of everything for you.
Same here. I've tinkered with it. I haven't done near as much with it as I probably should and want to. I had one situation I can't take credit for because the client actually came up with the idea, not me. But they went back and started basically applying RFM to their churn rate, right? And yeah. They actually discovered, so RFM, you're trying to identify what we call the whales, right? The big spenders, the long-term spenders, the people who buy a lot. And he actually discovered, strangely enough, that in recent years, his highest churn rate had been in his whales. So like he was still getting lots of new and mid and small customers, but the really big buyers were leaving. And it took quite a while for him to run all the reports and stack it all up in a spreadsheet and figure that out. But that's probably the most interesting thing that I've seen come out of a RFM analysis this year. So there's lots of, it's interesting. You can 80-20, obviously it is what it is, but if you only look at the first layer, you can miss big stuff like that, right? But when you look at it 3D, two yeah. dimensions or three dimensions, some fantastic stuff comes out sometimes.
Just before I moved off Infusionsoft, I had a few RFM campaigns running. So basically what they would do is if you bought something, so let's say you bought the Maze remarketing book, it would add a bunch of tags to your record in the CRM system that said bought in the last 60 days, 30 days, 7 days. And then after those time periods elapsed, the tags would get knocked off. So you could segment the database by the people who bought most recently. And you could do the same thing for clicks. You could say if someone clicks, you apply a tag to say clicked in the last 30 days, 14 days, 7 days, and then knock off those tags over time. So again, you can segment the database. You could also then do some calculations so that if someone has bought, you can increment a field that is the number of purchases, so the frequency. Mm-hmm. So you increment that each time. You could also run a calculation to add in the sale value. So you can start to add in how much someone has spent with you over time. So over time, you can sort of like pull that out of the system. And you don't want to be doing this sort of analysis in Infusionsoft. You want to use Infusionsoft to kind of do the calculation and pull the data out into a spreadsheet and compute the RFM value separately. But effectively, you can then organize your list based on an RFM score. And it's a bit of work to do because you've got to have these measures in place. But you know, if you got someone who knows, you know, if you got a system that can do this, like it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's just an extra step to think about upfront.
Very interesting. Yeah. So that's something to consider for kind of taking things to the next level. So now that we're focusing more on CRM at the very bottom, once they've actually gotten the lead. So now it's just opening up a Pandora's box of what can you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll have to lean on my two friends, Jonathan and Rob, for that kind of stuff.
I just mostly have grumpy feelings and bitterness about it. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole separate podcast, I think.
Yeah. Hey, like Rob, when we get to the 100th episode, we have to do like the grumpy episode or something.
The grumpy episode, like, if you really want to get me talking about this, it's talking about auditing Infusionsoft accounts, and you open it up, and I think we had Chris Davis on a year or so ago, and like he's an automation guy as well, and like the thing that really gets us is like you open up someone's Infusionsoft account, and you click on the campaigns tab, and it's like campaign A, summer promotion. It's like are you kidding me? Like, if you're not even going to use a consistent naming convention, and this applies to your Google ads as well, if you're not going to, you know, name things consistently so that I can look at it and figure out what on earth you were thinking, that to me is in the 99-1 of things to drive me nuts, basically. So.
I'm going to start a Google Doc and start keeping all the grumpy topics in a list. Anybody who's listening to this, if you want the grumpy episode,
yeah.
We want to know.
Yeah. Great, George. Well, perhaps you can tell our listeners what your website is and how they can get in touch with you. And I don't know, is there a link that people can go to look at the 80-20 audits?
Sure, absolutely. So if you go to provenresultsagency.com, that'll kind of take you where you need to go. So you can see our services there. There's good navigation. I think we designed a fairly good website, but you can find it there. So I think there might even be a shortcut, but provenresultsagency.com/8020, I believe that takes you to that URL as well. So I'm always open to helping people out and doing audits and stuff like that on ad accounts or on their whole marketing and sales funnel. And even if they're not in our area of expertise, then we just have people that we refer that out to and just want to help people and find the right solution for their needs. We're not every, whatever. We can't help everybody, or we can, but it's not the best use of our time. So, but yeah, that's where to go.
Excellent. Thanks. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, George. All right.
Bye.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Maze Marketing Podcast, you'll definitely want to make sure you're on our email list. Sign up for free at www.mazemarketingpodcast.com/hello. Also, before you go, please have a think. Who's the one person you know who really needs to hear this? Please forward along this episode. It just helps to spread the word. Thanks.